time in the country. We're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country, leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone, the best in music too. Spend some time in the country, we've been waiting here for you. Here in the country, waiting here for you.
Live from Ontario and heard around the world, welcome to In the Country with Dave Woods. This is the place for up-close and personal interviews, as well as great country music from our featured guests. So sit back and relax. Today's show starts right now.
Originally from Callahoo, Alberta, and now living in Nashville, country artist Sharon Anderson joins me on the show today to talk about her success with the group One Horse Blue, the trio Trinity Lane, as well as success with her solo career. In the 90s, she released two albums, The Bottom Line and Bringing It Home, both bringing her heavy airplay on Canadian country radio. And many of you will know a song of hers that she wrote for Lisa Brokaw that climbed the charts and gave Lisa, along with her Canadian audience, gave her a U.S. audience. That song is Give Me a Ring Sometime. Now it's time to follow Sharon's journey and the journey of her songs. My pleasure to welcome to the show Sharon Anderson. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Great to talk with you.
Yes, finally. Yeah.
We've had a chance leading up to the show to correspond through email, and I got to know a lot about your songs and everything, so it's been terrific.
Yes, you've been great. I appreciate it.
Well, looking forward to the show, we're going to share three of your songs from the past, including your version of Give Me a Ring Sometime, and we're going to get into all kinds of stuff. Let's start, Sharon, with your introduction to music when you were a kid, I suppose. How did music first come along and get you interested?
Okay, well, my mom played guitar, my dad played guitar, but my mom sang, and I had an Uncle Bruce that was a really good singer, in my books like Merle, but he never got really famous or anything, but in fact, I've got a song in the upcoming album about him and my auntie, and it's called Henrietta, but I sang at all the family functions as a kid. You know, I finally got big enough to get that guitar down from the closet. It was up way up high. I got a chair, right. And I got it down, and when I did, they showed me some chords, and I just took her from there
and got right into it. Now, how long after you first got into the guitar and music did you start to write songs? Can you recall the first couple of songs you wrote?
Oh, sure, can't you?
I sure can. For better or worse.
Yeah, for better or worse, but it was a lonesome little song. We had moved to the Okanagan Valley, and I believe I was like 12 or 13, and I wrote one because I missed Callahoo, and then I started writing I was a cheerleader, and I wrote all of our cheers, and then I wrote some more songs about statements about the air pollution, and I got into all kinds of different causes, and I always wrote. You know, it was always fun to write.
So obviously it's a place for you to put your thoughts on things that are important to you in that case, and you're expressing it, right. And giving other people a chance to understand your message.
Yeah. I've even written a book in the last year, and it's got a CD that goes with it too, and it's being received fairly well. I guess I have a bit of a knack for metaphors and just plain English, seems to me, but I have lots of stories to tell.
That's amazing. Now, are there any times, and I'm sure in every writer's life there is, I know there is, when sometimes the ideas aren't there, do you have something, Sharon, that you do or a place you go to stir up that creativity again?
Well, I wrote for many years on Music Row, and so it was very systematic. You go and you write. A lot of times you write with somebody else. And, yeah, there was times when I felt like this is too mechanical. And I guess all these years that I've been sitting and working at Ingram and all that, these songs must have been welling up inside of me because now they're just pouring out. But sure, what I do is I kind of look up and I open up. Instead of trying to conjuring up an idea, I let it fall out of the sky, more or less. I let it come to me because then I'm not in the way of it. And I just
right.
say, well, I need this kind of an idea and maybe a little bit of this kind of a melody, God, you give it to me. And then that's about all you really got to do if you really want it.
Yeah, so be open for it and not force it, but when it does show up, start to work at it, of course, but just let it come naturally, in other words.
Yes, exactly.
Very good. Well, you've had a long list of your songs recorded by American and Canadian acts, and I've got, as I told you before, the February issue of Country Music News published in Ottawa by Larry Delaney, and he did an article on you, The Writer's Block, his series for songwriters, and here it is with background on you and a list of all these songs. So you've had, you know, the Poverty Plainsmen, we of course know, Laura Vinson, Amber Dawn Fleury, Lucille Starr, so many great Canadian acts. What is it like each time you find out that someone's going to record one of your songs?
Well, actually, I found out when Larry Delaney did that. I was a bit humbled because I get all these BMI statements and SOCAN statements, but the fact is I still owe them so much money that I don't pay that much attention to it. You know, you get a writer's draw, but you got to pay that back. And then when you do all your demos, you got to pay that back too. So I think I still owe them like $25,000.
Oh, no.
So I don't really get a lot of royalties, and so I wasn't paying attention to my royalties. And when Larry, bless his heart, got a hold of me and said he was going to put that in the paper, and I was, like I told you, I was a bit humbled by that. And I wanted to say thank you to all the people that have recorded my songs and all the people that have listened and absorbed my music all these years in Canada. So I wrote Little Springtime Johnny out of that sentiment.
Isn't that great that you got back at the music? This article inspired you. And tell us about Springtime Johnny. Anyone who visits your site, SharonLenoreAnderson.com, will hear that song being played as they visit the site. Well, what's that whole story about?
Well, you can hear in my voice, you can hear that I do miss my Canada and my Rocky Mountains. I get choked up talking about it. But there was a little fella, Johnny Fulton, and he was in, me and Bo played at Whistler in 86, and he was like Wolf Carter, and he was from that era, and Hank Snow, and you know, our greats from Canada, Ian Tyson. I mean, the truly great songwriters that we had, the Canadiana folklore, traveling cowboys, these guys were, and Johnny was one of them, and he had written these beautiful little songs and sat around the campfire singing them. And one of them was very much like Four Strong Winds, and another one was very much like Blue Canadian Rockies. And poor little Johnny, he broke his hip that winter, and I helped him out with his hospital bill, like paid like the hospital $250 or something. Well, he felt so bad, he wanted to try and pay me back. And he started calling Tommy Hunter. I guess he knew Don and Leroy. And so he was calling them, and he just would not let up, and he wrote them letters till finally Tommy Hunter invited me to come on the show, and I played Tallahoo, my single at the time, my very first record. So Johnny did that for me, and he didn't have to pay me back, but he was back in the Squamish country along the coast there, and I lost track of him. And I thought someday, Mo was asking me about him, I thought someday I'd like to do something for him. I'd like to make people aware, you know. Ian knew him. I mean, they were ranch hands, and they sat around the campfire trading songs. And
wow.
So ideas came from these guys. Yep. And Ian Tyson is my hero. I mean, I just, the Gravel Road album is, I listen to it almost every day. It's my favorite album right now. And I love Ian. And I'm so proud of our Canadian heritage and these cowboy minstrels that brought us these beautiful images, This Is My Sky, you know, and songs like that. So
do you have a favorite Ian Tyson song when you enjoy performing, Sharon?
This Is My Sky.
Nice.
That's the one. But,
and listening to the album, as you mentioned, the Gravel Road, and just listening to Ian's voice obviously takes you back home to the Rockies in Alberta.
Something about him. I mean, we had Hank Snow, we had Wolf Carter, we've had a bunch of good ones, but Ian to me is, you know, America's got Bob Dylan and we've got Ian, and I even think that Ian's better. But
Ian is terrific. I mean, what a songwriter and what a singer, and just such a unique unique guy. Let's turn to one of your songs now here in the program, Sharon, and Give Me a Ring Sometime, which was a huge hit for Lisa Brokop. I remember loving this song back in the 90s. Just a great, fun song. Tell us about writing it and the process of having Lisa record it.
Oh, it was fun. Chris Burgess and Bob Mould. Chris Burgess had just had a beautiful hit on Wynonna's album. I can't remember the song, but the imagery was so good about the clothesline and the clothes in the wind. But he's just a wonderful songwriter. And we got together. We were friends for somehow, but we got together and put that song together, and it was so easy. I mean, it just fell out. Some songs are like that because we were having a fun time. And we demoed it up, and the demo was so neat that I think Lisa, when she heard it, well, Jerry Crutchfield was producing me for Capitol, and he also was, I think it was him that brought it to Lisa, because he asked me, who in Canada is good that I might want to produce? And I said, well, there's a young up-and-comer, Lisa Brokop. I think she's great. And he says, well, isn't that funny? You would tell me her name instead of trying to pitch yourself to me. I didn't even think of it, you know. But it might have been him that got her the song. But anyway, the demo was done up so nicely because we were going to cut it at one point, and then I lost my deal. But so I think Lisa pretty much did it like we had done it. Did you think, Dave, when you heard it, it was pretty much the same
yeah,
version?
Yeah, similar exact version, exactly. Just different vocals, of course, but the same style, same production.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a good little song for me.
And do you remember where the hook came from? The title "Give Me a Ring Sometime" is that what came first in the writing process?
Yeah. And I do believe that it was Chris. I do believe
okay.
It was Chris that came up with that. Give me a ring sometime instead of the telephone. It could be a wedding ring. And I
exactly.
Just jumped on that. Me and Bob said, wow. You know, and it didn't take
yeah.
any convincing.
No, that's a great hook when you got it right when you hear it, for sure. Let's share it now. This is Sharon Anderson's version of a song she co-wrote, Give Me a Ring Sometime, here on In the Country.
Sparkling through
And there's Sharon Anderson, Give Me a Ring Sometime, a song she co-wrote and became a huge hit for Lisa Brokop here in Canada and also introduced her to the U.S. market. And you were talking before, Sharon, about, by the way, great version there. You do a simply wonderful job on that.
Well, hey, I'm here dancing on my back patio.
It's a catchy song.
Yeah, I still like it.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. You talked earlier about the co-writing sessions and on Music Row, and that can you describe for our listeners what those sessions are like, where you're meeting up with one or two other writers, and your job basically that day or those 3 hours is to try to write a hit song.
Yeah. Boy, I tell you what, it must be like the guys in the comedy routines. You're thinking, you're looking in books, you're looking at titles. Anything that somebody says that's cute, you think, can that work? But then Jerry Crutchfield told me something one time. He said, don't always hook everything. He said, just let it come from your heart. But anyway, that's what you would do. You would sit with a couple other people in a room, and you got to be friends. But, you know, before you knew each other very well, you really were trying real hard and sometimes too hard. But other times that nervousness did you well. But you would come up with maybe a title first, or maybe a little musical, something pretty that you did on the guitar or
right.
piano. And then you would throw it out there. We would make jokes like you're peeing over the edge, like if you were a big ship and you were stuck in the ice and somebody had an idea to pee over the edge, well, that's a good way to get warm water and get you out. So any little thing to start, any little
right.
thing to, you know, to get you started, somebody might say, well, that's a crappy line. Well, it got us started, didn't it, you know? So so we would just put our heads together, and boy, you know, you look back on that, and those people got real close to you because you were doing something real special together.
Yeah, there's a real bond when you've written a song together. You're sharing in that process, creating something from nothing. And along your lines there, when you talked about at least starting with something, it's so true, because if everybody's so nervous and maybe a little uncertain about whether their line's any good, then nothing's going to get started. So you might as well start
right.
with something and work your way.
Yes, you have to have one quality, and that is not minding to make a fool of yourself.
Right.
And is that how you do it? Because you write beautiful songs. I guess you do the lyric and you have other people do the melody, or do you help with the melody too?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I focus in on the lyrics, and so a lot of times I'll start them myself and finish them myself until I present them to the co-writer, and then we can carve away at that point. But, yeah, you get those ideas. Like you say, you just sort of get inspired by something, and hopefully it keeps going through as you continue, or you get back to it the next day.
I'll tell you something about Springtime Johnny. I had just listened. I was listening to The Gravel Road, Ian Tyson. That little song about I can't make it home for Christmas, but that little star on my Christmas tree, tell Mom I'm okay and all that. That
yeah.
song played, and as soon as that song played, I had Springtime Johnny in my mind. I had to turn off the record player because I knew that something was brewing in me. And I sat down and just Springtime Johnny came out, you know, and it. At first, it was a little too much like Ian's song, but I've written for so long now that I know by the time I'm finished, it won't be recognizable. But it was
right.
very much that inspiration. Other music is a great, great inspiration to a new music.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely, definitely. And Ian Tyson is somebody who's great to be inspired by. Did you get a chance at this point to meet Ian through your travels?
Oh. I sure have been talking about him a lot. I didn't mean to, but no, I've never met Ian, and no, I never have. Holger sent me the album. I'm friends with his manager. Well, I don't know if it's Holger at Stony Plain Records is a good friend to me or has been a good friend, and so he sends me some of the stuff, Cindy Church and some of his bands that he has,
yeah.
and he sent me Ian's album.
Oh, great. Now, I was reading at your website back in the 90s when you were doing some touring. I think I saw the name Garth Brooks on there. Is he one of the people that you sort of were in the circles with?
Yeah, well, I don't think Garth ever knew me, but I was there when he came to Capitol Records. And we were on some records together. Like, we did some interviews on an promotion album that they gave out, and then one of my songs, The Wheel of Love, was on a promotion album that Garth had, oh, his big hit. If I can't remember it, but you know, If You Die Tomorrow.
If Tomorrow Never Comes.
I believe it was that one.
Yeah.
But no, if Garth saw me, he probably wouldn't even know me. So, but I saw him come, and I saw the whole thing blossom. You know, that Jimmy Bowen was sort of working with me, and then Garth came in, and he produced Garth, and he produced. There was a lot of people on Capitol then: Susie Boggess and Joelle Saunier, and Hal Ketchum, and it was exciting.
Yeah, great lineup of artists back then in the early to mid 90s, wasn't there? It was a real exciting time. So many new,
yes,
great, unique artists.
Yeah, I was like a kid in a candy store. But you know, I didn't get famous, and they all did. So, but it was meant to be the way it was meant to be.
Well, over the years, as we've mentioned, your songs have found a home with so many different artists. Sharon, is there somebody to this day that has eluded you, that you've made attempts in the past to pitch a song to, and you're just waiting for that day?
Nope. No, I like singing them. And,
oh, there
you know,
you go.
It doesn't matter if somebody did. I used to like think that way, and I would love it if Nancy Griffiths sang one of my songs. She's my female hero.
Nice.
Yeah.
And back in the day, was there anyone where you're thinking in terms of like the Judds or those kind of artists?
They did cut one, but it didn't get on the album. In the final cut, it didn't make the album. But it was exciting, and I got to write. I just feel so blessed. I got to write with really, really good writers that have written really famous songs, and I learned so much. And even if the artists didn't cut my songs, I still have those experiences. Having written something with somebody like that, I was telling you that your writing reminds me of Chris Waters, the way his lyrics, the way he thought about lyrics, and he was wonderful to write with. And Walt Aldridge and some of these guys were just beautiful to glean off of. Johnny Cymbal is no longer with us, but I wrote lots with Johnny. He worked at the same publishing company as me, and he wrote like Mary in the Morning for Elvis and Cinnamon, Let Me In. Remember that 60s song? Miss Bassman and Johnny, I used to like to try and mimic the way he sang, because he had a beautiful, luring way of singing a line. And I've borrowed from so many people different little techniques. And in my writing, too, I think. I may have not have got to the stature of them, but I sure did enjoy, you know, trying to put things in place and make things work the way I saw that they did.
It is an enjoyable process, the whole songwriting thing, as you've mentioned there. I mean, regardless of what happens to the songs, just the journey of the song, creating it, bonding with the other writers, and ending up with something you're really proud of. And, you know, whatever happens after that is to some degree out of your hands, but it's a great process to be involved in.
Well, and, you know, nothing is ever for nothing. It looks like right now I'm writing so much, and I'm really loving it. And the people that are surrounding me with this Life and Times album project that I'm doing right now, everything that was bubbling within me is coming out in its own way, in its own time. And I think, well, none of it has slipped through the holes in the bucket. It's all right here, still inside me.
Right. That's amazing, and it's like a well, isn't it, that you sort of dip into. That's one metaphor for it, just the whole way you find ideas and where they exist.
It's a true wealth, isn't it? Right inside. I don't think you ever do lose it if you can be in touch with it, and I'm so happy to be in touch with it. I was joking with my husband. I said, I think this is the beginning of the beginning of my bucket list is to get this album, because it's such a joy, and there were so many loose ends, you know, with me losing my record deal and this Trinity Lane, these Trinity Lane songs are going on the album. We did that for Curb Records. And you will love this. I hope I'm right. You will, and the listeners will love this. This was me and Alan Estes and Tom Grant had a trio, and we were like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, kind of, or the Mamas and Papas. We wrote everything so passionately with all the harmonies right into the writing. And that stuff was obscured, never got to be heard because we lost that record deal, too. I don't know, our timing just wasn't right, I guess. So I'm putting four of them on the album. And if things go well, maybe someday the whole Trinity Lane project will come out, at least if I get to put it on my website one day. People will get to hear this stuff. The 18 players in Nashville, all of the best players of the day, were on these sessions. And you look at the list and you just go, holy smokes. So if I can be the one to expose some of these songs to people, they'll get to hear some really beautiful arrangements.
Well, that's great to hear that there's a chance, a good chance we're going to hear that music on your album or at your website, SharonLenoreAnderson.com. We're going to look forward to that. Let's turn now to another one of your songs, Sharon. This one's called Unbelievable Love. What can you tell us about this before we spin it again for our listeners?
Well, there you go. That's Johnny Cymbal. Me and Johnny were writing that song together. This is Unbelievable Love. And I don't know that it says... The chorus says that line over and over, but I shortened it up a little bit so it wasn't a little redundant, and I like it better this way, so it's only 2 minutes and something, maybe. But this is Johnny Cymbal and I, and he also wrote The Wheel of Love, which did really well for me.
Yeah.
And so it's an upbeat little song, too. I mean, it feels good, and we enjoy doing it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's got a nice message in it, too, and... Yeah, it's really nice to listen to. Well, let's share it now, Sharon, and then we'll come back and talk about a lot more. This is Sharon Anderson, Unbelievable Love. Sharon Anderson and Unbelievable Love. Now, Sharon, when you're writing a song, and I believe you write it on the guitar most times, are you thinking in terms of production and hearing in your mind the additions, the musical additions that are going to end up on the final recording?
Well, at first I never thought that way, but to write with some of these guys, they write it right into the song, and I learned kind of how to do that and to make the space. And mostly it's a matter of having confidence in the song, even though you're not hearing all of that yet, because you kind of make the space in your mind for it and leave an opening for what you think is going to fit well in there. And so the song won't always sound just right until you get it the way you're hearing it in your head. But,
right.
It was a learning curve for me to start thinking that way. And the more I learned, the more I was in the studio, the more it would naturally, the instrumentation and the hook, the instrumental hook lines. Then I started really enjoying coming up with different kinds of solos that would fit into the song and the way
All right.
bridge would go into a solo and a modulation and different things like that. So my earlier songs, some of them are very sweet, you know, and very simple, and there's a beauty in that. But later on, they got mature in that way.
Is there one of your songs that you've written, Sharon, that moves you the most? One that when you're on stage performing, or even in a smaller group, kind of gets you choked up a little?
Yeah. There's one that I wrote lately called "Morning Song," but it's kind of an inspirational song. It's "Morning Song." So it is, you came to stay one dreary winter's day. A teardrop let you in with the windows opening. A tear began to flow, a love from long ago. Therein began to grow as I held you near. It's what
wow.
music does for me. It's what music does for me, and it was like a love from long ago that came back to me. And it trickled down inside the wall where love had been denied, and how the withered me inside has blossomed with the dawn. And it came right around to the beginning, that morning theme. And it did that all by itself, and it almost made me weep. And when I hear the song, it opens my heart up. And so I thought, well, isn't that what music really is? It's communication. It's the best communication people have with each other. And
yep.
that was enough reason for me to... You know, I work 10 hours a day at Ingram and just a kind of a normal kind of a job. And I'm squeezing in my music because now I got in my mind that I want to share something good, you know, before I leave this earth. And I know it sounds grandiose, but it's true. Everybody needs to feel like they can do that or at least try.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And a song, as you say, communicates things that we can't communicate other ways. I mean, we can't have a conversation and always express how we feel, but a song will do that. The music touches our emotions and the lyrics, I mean, and together, it's an undeniable effect on us, isn't it?
And it doesn't even need lyrics. Some of the music, just instrumental music, has touched
sure.
me so deeply. You know, it's just, I guess it's vibrations. I don't know, but I've been touched by music deeper than pretty much anything else in life.
That's amazing. Any favorite venues, Sharon, over the years you've had to perform at? Favorite stages that there was just a little bit of magic as you performed?
Well, the Bluebird Cafe, of course, in Nashville. But lately I've been, as little as I've been performing, there is this Full Moon Pickin' Party, and it's out at Percy Warner Park near Nashville here, and my husband's cousin puts it on. She's in charge of the parks. But I'm telling you, Canada should put these on. There's a big old barn, beautiful barn, with all these barn swallows, and if you're in the south, you call them a sizzle tail. But anyway, these barn swallows, and you sit on bales of hay and park benches and blankets, and it's all families, and there's a main stage on one side of the barn, and big 400-year-old oak trees and hackberry
oh, wow.
trees. And then over to the side of the barn, little groups of musicians gather just out of earshot with each other. And they roam back and forth getting in different little groups. And if you bring an instrument, you only have to pay $5 to get in. Otherwise, it's $10 to get in, and you get 4 draft beers and homemade hamburgers and stuff like that. But these guys that are playing, roaming around playing this music, and sometimes it just gets so heated, and I mean, beautiful, beautiful rootsy, bluegrassy, folky music. And these guys are the session players from Nashville. I mean, some of them are the old guys that used to be the main session players. And
yeah,
then
yeah.
Some young ones that are just coming up. And then some of the really, really good players will just come because they love it so much. So I've been getting up and opening the show at the main stage, and that's got to be my favorite right now. It's just
nice.
Great, that's yeah.
That is terrific. That's terrific.
Good idea.
Sharon,
yeah.
Of the new crop of talent out there now on the country music scene, is there one or two names, artists that have made an impression on you, that you enjoy their music? Even over the last 10 years.
Yep, the Farewell Drifters. And I want you to look them up, Dave, because they're awesome. They were at the Full Moon Pickin' Parties for a couple of years until all of a sudden they got really famous. And it's pretty much bluegrass, but they'll take a Beatles song and do it bluegrassy.
Oh, nice.
And they're just so such beautiful kids. They're college kids. And now they've hit it really big. I think their album is doing like the top 30 in the country or something like that. They're playing in New York and all over, so they don't come and do the bluegrass fest, our little bluegrass thing, anymore. But you listen to these kids, and my favorite of them, besides the songs, is the guitar player. This guitar player, I have never heard anyone in Nashville who's better than him. I mean, I've heard he's as, did I say that the right way? He's as good as any of them in is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a really, really good picker. And so, he's so tasty what he does, and his tone on the guitar is just so great. And they're all just fabulous, high-quality musicians, and that really gets me excited. I love bluegrass, and I love country, and I love R&B and blues, and but I'm a folky at heart, and these kids tend to be folky bluegrassy. And
right.
There's something about it I just love, so I have to say them.
Yeah, the
Farewell
Drifters. Farewell Drifters. I'll be sure to look them up, and I'll encourage our listeners, too, so they can see what you see
well,
in them. I've had bluegrass artists on before, and I enjoy the music, of course, and it's great to talk to them to hear. I also love, as you mentioned, when they take a song that, like the Beatles or a song that isn't traditionally bluegrass at all and put a bluegrass spin. That's always cool.
Yeah. Your day breaks, your mind aches. Do 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 do. You know, the intricate little lyric, melody, it's not your standard three-chord thing.
Nice. Very nice. Let's turn back, Sharon, in our remaining moments here. The final song we're going to play, yours, is called Farther to Fall, and a couple of people have recorded this, the Poverty Plains Men and Albright. Can you talk about the song and a bit of the writing on it?
Oh, I'm so glad you chose out that song. I wrote that a long time ago with Walt Aldridge, and he wrote, "There ain't no getting over me," for Ronnie.
Love that Ronnie song.
Yeah, and he's written a bunch of new stuff that I don't even keep up with. But I chose that song to put on the Life and Times album, and now that you chose it, I'm thinking I chose a good one. But
you sure did.
I went to Alabama to write with him in Muscle Shoals, and I wrote three songs with him, and all three of them are really good. And he was just one of those people that I wish I could be around all the time. Look him up on the web if you ever get a chance and listen to some beautiful guitar player, beautiful singer. And I can't say enough about Walt. He's just, I don't know if he ever got famous in his own right as an artist, but he should have.
You know, I've read up on him. I've seen his name in the past, Sharon, as a songwriter, of course. And there was an album I had, and the name of the group is escaping me, but he was part of a group, him and I think three other guys. Good Memories, You Can't Lose Them All. Playoff of You Can't Win Them All. But I can't remember the name of the group anyway. Walt is great.
You're right, and I can't remember it either. But you sure do your homework. My goodness, you put a good show together. I really appreciate all this, Dave. I sure do.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure, Sharon. It's been great spending the time. Well, let's share the song, and we'll come back and wrap things up. How does that sound?
All righty.
This is Sharon Anderson and Farther to Fall.
I can see you've been hurt by somebody else.
Anderson and a great song, Farther to Fall, as we follow the journey of her songs. You can continue that journey at SharonLenoreAnderson.com, and that'll be a great place to find out about the brand new album that's coming out. We've just about run out of time, Sharon. I got enough time to thank you so much. It's been a pleasure sharing the time and sharing the songs.
You have been so great. Thank you for supporting me, and thank you to all the radio people that have listened and absorbed my music. It makes it all the more sweet to give it.
It's been a pleasure, and we'll be staying in touch, you and I, and we're going to write some great songs together.
Yes, sir.
My guest today has been Sharon Anderson, originally from Kalahoo, Alberta, and now living in Nashville, and we got a chance to follow the journey of many of her songs. I'm Dave Woods. Thanks for tuning in to In the Country.
Some time in the country, we're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country, leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone, the best in music too. Spend some time in the country, we've been waiting here for you.